Hi, my name is Janelle Engelstad, and welcome to the MAP Radio Hour, a Make Art with Purpose podcast. The MAP Radio Hour includes conversations with creatives, scientists, and other people addressing the intersection of cultural, political, and environmental concerns. You can find out more about MAP and our projects at makeartwithpurpose.net. MAP's special series of podcasts, produced in conjunction with the 30th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall, continues with Jan Jorlovsky, the director of the Open Society Foundation in Slovakia. Jan recounts growing up during communism and reflects on his work with Open Society and the current political environment in Central Europe. Our conversation took place in Bratislava. So, what is Open Society up to now? What are you working on?
Since 2013, across Europe, we work as independent foundations. Mm-hmm. That means that we are not part of the network in the sense of administrative or financial dependence.
Okay.
So, there was a spin-off process which started in 2010 when George decided that, well, I've been here for 18 years, you've now graduated, you're adults, basically.
Right.
And I have to move to other challenges in Eastern Europe or somewhere else. Therefore, I would love for you to stay and do the mission in your country, but you will not be receiving any regular grants coming from my New York center. You can always apply to any grant schemes we are keeping mm-hmm. open for everyone mm-hmm. in the world. But it's not going to be regular. Mm-hmm. So if you win, you win. If you lose, you lose. Mm-hmm. So basically, since 2013, my OSF is the same NGO as any other NGO mm-hmm. applying for, let's say, grant in democracy or Roma issue
or
whatever
or
that
something.
Is.
Exactly. Yeah. So what are you doing?
So locally? At this point, locally, we are in charge of the Norwegian financial mechanism, since Norwegians are not part of the EU. Mm-hmm. So they have the Euro funds done by their own scheme, which mm-hmm. is called the EEA grants, European Economic Area grants. Mm-hmm. So they came up with Iceland and Liechtenstein with a scheme where 90% of the money is given to the government of Slovakia. And 10% is left for NGOs. So they announced public tender. We won the public tender for managing 8 million euros over 5 years, and this is the second time we are doing it. We started in 2013 until 2016, which was about 3.5 million. So now we are in a consortium of three foundations, mm-hmm. And our portion out of those 8 million is 3.5. So basically, my organization is in charge to make sure that those who receive grants from us are doing it right, they are following the rules, and we report back to Norwegian government, this is how we spent 3.5 million euros, this is what we have done with mm-hmm. the money. Mm-hmm. So that's basically the supporting the undeveloped regions, but the Norwegians decided like NGOs shouldn't manage their own money by themselves, unlike Europe, which is doing it yeah. differently. So that's one. And then we have two programs called Open Schools and Aflatun. Open Schools is basically peer education for elementary school kids, where we teach them how to basically debate and work with the school council so that you as kids have rights to actually influence how you are being taught mm-hmm. and you should be speaking about that. And that basically teaches you how to argue in a civilized way
right.
and make things happen.
Right.
So it's not that you're only the subject of education, but you're part of the process. You're
right.
not only being taught to, but you also influence how the teachers are basically behaving. Not just teachers, but the whole atmosphere of the school mm-hmm. and the class. Aflatun is a Dutch methodology for financial and social education. So we have 10 kindergartens where we basically train the teachers who now work with 500 kids of Roma communities about financial and social education. So we start with you as a person, then community, and then we come to financial issues. Like, you should not throw money around because Roma language, for example, doesn't have the word for future.
Mm-hmm.
So they have only now and here and now.
Mm-hmm.
So they, even the language doesn't recognize that there is a future. Mm-hmm. So saving and working with money is some very strange concept for them. So this mm-hmm. is what we are trying to do with the kids. And then the fourth program we have is we would like to develop some kind of a decent media literacy program in the country, because that's mm-hmm. only voluntary at schools. Nobody knows how to teach it, and there is this information all over the place. So now we are trying to establish like an independent platform of different people, organizations, and individuals who would try to persuade the government that yes, mm-hmm. it's worth having a media literacy program started at the elementary school level, and also teach and train the teachers, because 53% of the teachers in elementary schools in Slovakia recommend alternative media, such as Breitbart, mm-hmm. That it's okay to read. That's the alternative to mainstream media. So if the teachers say to the kids that yeah. you can read the bullshit media to be educated better, that's very scary for me. Mm-hmm. And we are not talking about the military, and we're not talking about police force, which is completely crazy. And the fifth element is our journalist award, which we hold once a year for journalists. But yesterday we had a big meeting where I would like to push it not just to have one event in May, but basically put programs around it, like mm-hmm. workshops for the students of journalism, mm-hmm. workshops for the journalists themselves, having, let's say, prime time investigative journalists from States, Germany, France come over and have a 3-day workshop with our investigative guys, or someone who is a foreign correspondent to, you know, basically cheer up the kids here who learn journalism. Like, yes, it's nice to be a foreign correspondent, because like there is almost nobody left who does the foreign affairs in media.
So we're coming upon this mm-hmm. 30th anniversary of the wall. Well, first of all, where were you in 1989? You were here?
I was in Brno. I was studying English. Uh-huh. It was a sort of like a day school, which ended up with English proficiency certificate.
Right.
And so in the morning I was in the schools. In the afternoon I was working as a staff of the food store. Uh-huh. And when the demonstrations broke up, I asked my boss, who was a tiny lady, may I, pani vedoucí, that's the Mrs. Director, uh-huh. or would you call it Mrs. Leader, uh-huh. may I go to the demonstration? It's like, Honzo, like Jan, what are you, crazy? Uh-huh. People need to eat. It's like, lidi musí žrát.
Yeah.
Like, gobble, I would say, uh-huh. it's like not a very endearing term. Uh-huh. It means like animals are doing the, I don't know, animals in...
Eating.
So, yeah. But žrát, yes, jak jíst and žrát are two different words. Jíst means for humans, and žrát is for dogs and animals. Uh-huh. So, lidi musí žrát. So, she let me go to like two demonstrations, but since I was in the afternoon shift, she insisted that no, I need you here. People still will, after demonstration, will come to buy food here, and I have nobody else. So I was not organized in any kind of committee or anything, because I was the food supplier at the time. Uh-huh. But it was very interesting to see, even in my school, that when we were sort of like putting together the revolutionary committee, mm-hmm. immediately they turned to a girl whose father was the regional chief of Communist Party, and everybody was, you're a bad girl. So I stood up that time. I was like, what are you, crazy? What is she responsible for? What her father's mm-hmm. career is? Mm-hmm. Like, you don't even know her. Mm-hmm. You know, she's just the daughter of someone who is the mm-hmm. Communist Party leader, mm-hmm. but she's not responsible for it. Mm-hmm. And if this is supposed to be the major issue of our committee, like, fuck you, I'm going away. Mm-hmm. And I didn't come back. Czech Republic was not part of my feeling of like I belong here, and I didn't want to stay in Brno. So I said, like, you deal with your stuff. But for me, the 30 years have done tremendous change in how we run the country. I have to go back to 1918 even to look at Czech Republic, which at the time had 28% of the households under electricity, mm-hmm. and in Slovakia it was only 2%. Mm-hmm. So in those 100 years we have gone through amazing progress, which in 1950, Janelle, there was only 0.8% of the Slovaks with university degree. 0.8% in 1950.
Wow.
And only 2.1% of the population had high school diploma.
Yeah, so people here were really workers.
It was really workers. So we are, that's why I sometimes feel like, yes, we're backwards, because it's just too fast for us.
Yeah, it hasn't been that much time. If you look at the last 10 years, it seems like a lot has changed from when I lived here even. I feel like before you could really easily touch socialism in like 2006, 7, 8, 9, those years. And now it feels like there's a little more distance.
I mean, I think from my perspective, it depends on who you talk to.
Yeah, and where you are probably.
Definitely, like young generation has no recollection. Even like for me, interesting thing was that Nicola had the friend from Seattle who came. And she was here for a week, and it was fantastic because that's her, you know, friend from high school.
Right.
And she was showing her around. So they went to Jevin Castle. And I asked Nicola, did you show her the Iron Curtain? And she said, what? It's like, well, I told you that there were, you know, barbed wire fences.
Right out there,
It was actually the only physical barrier between East and West in the capital was in Berlin and Bratislava. So physically, you could see the Iron Curtain in only two capitals of Europe, Berlin and Bratislava. It didn't occur to me. I said, okay. I said, yes, for her, this is nothing. Because it's like, if someone asked me, do you remember where were people shot in 1968 by the Soviet army? It's like, yes, I can tell there are two plagues at the university and SMP Square, but there are more people who died. And I never show it to anyone who comes to Breslau. So 1968, as a reference point for someone who was born in 1966, is not something which I take as a reference point.
Right.
I can say that, yes, but Iron Curtain, I really lived through. I couldn't get out. I was 23 when I left in summer of 89, 4 months before the revolution took place. I went to London because I graduated from the university, and my aunt, she said like, oh, you're the first in the family who graduated from the university. I was the oldest nephew. So she invited me to visit her in Ireland. So I went to the West when I was graduated from the university for the first time in my life. And I just remember that I didn't sleep on the train from Bratislava all the way to London.
That must have been like eye-opening for you.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. So for me, this is just that the socialism is referred to by people who actually feel that they've been betrayed. My mother is now 76, and she sometimes feels like it was better, even though she was very much against the regime before. But now she feels like, oh, you know, all the reforms, and she's a doctor, that all the reforms in healthcare were screwed up and we lost a human being out of it. It's now basically about the economy. It's like, well, Mom, it's not really true. We are still finding the balance between the two. Like, what is your constitutional right and what you should be paying for? Like, if you don't care about your healthcare, why should the state worry about it more than you do?
Right.
So I can give, treatment to a patient who falls for cancer because of his predisposition, but why should I be paying someone who smokes 40 cigarettes a day?
Right.
I mean, that's something what he should be paying for because he doesn't care.
Right.
But anyway, so this is more of on a philosophical level, but I think the reason why people feel left behind is that even under communist times, you could go and complain to a communist party about misbehavior of your boss, and the Communist Party would take it seriously. So the ordinary person felt he or she can be protected in one way or another by the system. Now they feel like the system is so diversified
And fragmented.
And fragmented is the word, that you don't really have anyone to go to. I mean, in big companies, they still have trade unions, like Volkswagen has good trade unions, but not all the trade unions do their job. And actually, I heard that in Kia, they really discourage the trade union leaders from being powerful. But the Germans have the different tradition. So that's why the Volkswagen trade unions are better off than the ones in Kia, in Žilina. But still, those companies are doing well. People are paid, so that's okay. But let's say people in smaller companies, like let's say you have a textile company making shirts. Company goes bankrupt, the investors are from Italy, and suddenly 120 women have no job. And their pension funds are empty because they didn't pay on time. So that's like Enron. Then people are like, oh my gosh, this never happened. While in the States, probably people did have that experience, but for people here, it's very new.
There's no safety net for those people.
They feel like they're not protected. Healthcare now.
But is that every generation or just the older generation who lived under socialism that feels that?
I think even younger people who didn't experience socialism, those who work in manual labor, are basically talking to their parents. And their parents can compare. So, for example, someone who was making armaments, who was working in armaments industry, was making three times the money my mother did. So if that person, as a father, talks to his son that I was making 15,000 crowns and the doctors were making five, of course his son believes that since now my mother would be the one making 15 and he would be making seven or eight, they feel betrayed, that it was the working class who was better off than the intellectuals. That has changed.
Right.
So they feel like, why are we worse off than before?
So you talked about how people don't have hope, you think, as much, and people have anxiety about the future, where, you know, after the war and after the wall especially, I can remember when the wall came down, you know, because I was on the other side of that Iron Curtain, and I'm the same generation as you. It was euphoria. I mean, everything we feared, it was like both sides felt, you know, there was a promise of peace and unity that we never before experienced.
Yeah, Fukuyama said, end of history.
It's like the end of history, exactly.
And it's not.
It's not. How do you feel about hope? I mean, what do you feel about the future?
Since we work with the kids at the foundation and I see my daughter growing up, I see a huge optimism is ahead of us. I feel that this generation is really serious about climate change. That I see when I talk to Jonah about consumerism, he's totally out of his mind. When he used to work in Nike store.
That's in Bellingham, wasn't it?
And he's just like, Dad, you wouldn't believe how much shit we have to pack after the sales. I mean, there is so much garbage going out. And I think that this generation will change it, that we'll have to come with a different approach to how we consume things, how much we have, and like in the 60s, people were afraid that we'll have a huge hunger on the planet, and then one scientist came up with famine. And he came up with the idea of how to genetically tweak the corn and wheat, and we quadrupled our
output.
So I think something of that revolutionary nature will happen. We are part of the nature, which we sometimes don't realize because of all these little gadgets we have. But the nature will take care of itself.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Nature will totally take care of herself. I mean, look what's happened at Chernobyl.
Exactly.
There's wolves that returned, and there's a forest. I mean, even though people can't go there, the planet is totally...
I think we did have become a force of nature, which has not been the case until pretty much the 20th century. That it was always the volcanoes, earthquakes, changing the face of the planet. But now it's the human race, which has changed the climate. Therefore, with the numbers we have, 7 billion plus, we are force of nature, and the force of nature will, you know, counter. So either we manage it or we don't. And the same is with the society. Either we can manage our freedom or we cannot. And at this point, the way how we handled last decade is not always something you are proud of. But on the other hand, I always feel like we somehow in the last minute do the right thing. Mm-hmm. It was like the Slovak National Uprising. We were the fascist state.
Mm-hmm.
But there was still strong enough will of, you know, maybe 20, 30, 50,000 people who said, no, this is not the country I want to live in. And you had the head of the Slovak Central Bank basically funding the national uprising mm-hmm. with the gold of the fascist state.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, and he suffered afterwards. Mm-hmm. The communists basically put him in jail.
Mm-hmm.
But this, the guy took his own personal risk
mm-hmm.
and funded the whole thing. It's almost that somehow there is this common sense like, oh, this is not right for us.
This special series of the MAP Radio Hour is produced with support from Trust for Mutual Understanding, Wozniak Center for Contemporary Art in Gdansk, the Fulbright Slovak Commission 25th Anniversary Fund, and Leonardo, the International Society for the Arts, Sciences, and Technology. The MAP Radio Hour is produced by Matthew Horton, and the theme song is by Otto Huditz. I'm Janelle Engelstad. Thanks for listening, and visit the Make Art with Purpose website to connect with us on social media.